evening, everyone. It's a great joy to spend this equinox with you. I've always noticed that at these times of transitions, there's a great deal of energy that goes out. We know that through Indian religion and philosophy that there are a change of seasons that come within the seasons of the world as we mark them, but also as they occur within larger cycles. It's an amazing thing when you think about it that the universe that we live in, the stars, the planets, the moon, the sun, they all have such a tremendous influence upon us. There are few who can accurately read the stars, but I think that there is no doubt for anybody who has ever worked in emergency rooms or in mental health that there are those times when there's a full moon or other times of intensity when there is a lot of activity for them as professionals. I feel it within my own body and my own self. I notice it in the work that I do with others. In the last 3 weeks or so, in particular, there has been a great intensity. And a little bit before that as well, but there's been this buildup that has been coming. And with that intensity comes a great many challenges for people. Now, not everybody experiences it in the same way because our makeup is different. But I know that this is, for instance, a good time for beginnings today. We launched the new website, the new look of the website for Cross and Lotus. And it's always been that way with me, not through planning necessarily, but it always seems like this is a time of beginnings, which is interesting. It's a time of harvest, symbolically. And yet, for me, it's almost more of a time of springtime, a time of new things being started. New crops being planted, new seeds being sown. And so this is the way that it is, and there's been many, many things that have been coming to me lately, many difficulties that different individuals have been having. And as we draw closer, it seems like, in general, that there is some relief around that. So it's a wonderful time that we can come and mark this together, because when you hook yourself to a star of realization, this greater energy can stir up things in the subconscious realms, but for the purpose of purification. And when you keep your mind upon God, it is a time of quickening. It is a time of upliftment, if you will see it as such. If somebody does not have their mind focused upon God and the higher virtues, then it can stir up the things of the subconscious and be a great troublemaker. And people find themselves in trouble because there is a stirring up, but there's no upliftment that comes with it. The purification doesn't happen because the mind is not attuned to that. So it is a time of, perhaps, of danger. It is a time of change. It is a time of stirring things up. But it is also a time of great potential, and that's why we come together, in order to attune ourselves to the highest divine consciousness so that the extraordinary energies that are flowing to us at this time can be utilized for transformation. For evolution and involution, not devolution. There's a favorite reading that I have from the autobiography of a yogi that describes Sri Yukteswar's celebration at the time, and he had four celebrations a year. And the two solstices and the two equinoxes were the times for those. And they were joyous times, times of chanting God's name, times of feasting, times of everybody coming together. So I'd like to pick up, this is from the chapter, The Cauliflower Robbery. Sri Yukteswar sponsored four yearly festivals at the equinoxes and solstices when his students gathered from far and near. The winter solstice celebration was held in Serampore. The first one I attended left me with a permanent blessing. The festivities started in the morning with a barefoot procession along the streets. The voices of 100 students rang out with sweet religious songs. A few musicians played the flute and the kol kartal, drums and cymbals. Enthusiastic townspeople strewed the path with flowers, glad to be summoned from prosaic tasks by a resounding praise of the Lord's blessed name. The long tour ended in the courtyard of the hermitage. There we encircled our guru, while students on the upper balcony showered us with marigold blossoms. Many guests went upstairs to receive a pudding of chana and oranges. I made my way to a group of brother disciples who were serving today as cooks. Food for such a large gathering had to be cooked outdoors in huge cauldrons. The improvised wood-burning brick stoves were smoky and tear-provoking, but we laughed merrily at our work. Religious festivals in India are never considered troublesome. Each one does his part, supplying money, rice, vegetables, or his personal services. Master was soon in our midst, supervising the details of the feast. Busy every moment, he kept pace with the most energetic young student. A sankirtan, group chanting, accompanied by harmonium and hand-played Indian drums, was in progress on the second floor. Sri Yukteswar listened appreciatively. His musical sense was acutely perfect. They are off-key. The master left the cooks and joined the artists. The melody was heard again, this time correctly rendered. The Sankirtan issuing from Sri Yukteswar's second balcony sitting room on the day of the festival was inspiring to the cooks amidst the steaming pots. My brother disciples and I joyously sang the refrains, beating time with our hands. By sunset, we had served our hundreds of visitors with khichuri, rice and lentils, khichuri, rather, vegetable curry and rice pudding. We laid cotton blankets on the courtyard. Soon the assemblage was squatting under the starry vault, quietly attentive to the wisdom pouring from Sri Yukteswar's lips. His public speeches emphasized the value of Kriya Yoga and a life of self-respect, calmness, determination, simple diet, and regular exercise. A group of very young disciples then chanted a few secret hymns. The meeting concluded with Sankirtan. From 10 o'clock until midnight, the ashram residents washed pots and pans and cleared the courtyard. My guru called me to his side. I am pleased over your cheerful labors today and during the past week of preparations. I want you with me. You may sleep in my bed tonight. This was a privilege I had never thought would fall to my lot. We sat a while in a state of intense divine tranquility. Hardly 10 minutes after we had gotten into bed, Master rose and began to dress. What is the Master, sir? I felt a tinge of unreality in the unexpected joy of sleeping beside my guru. I think that a few students who miss the proper train connections will be here soon. Let us have some food ready. Guruji, no one would come at 1 o'clock in the morning. stay in bed. You've been working very hard, but I am going to cook. At Sri Yukteswar's resolute tone, I jumped up and followed him to the small, daily used kitchen adjacent to the second story inner balcony. Rice and dal were soon boiling. My guru smiled affectionately. Tonight you have conquered fatigue and fear of hard work. You shall never be bothered by them in the future. As he uttered these words of lifelong blessings, footsteps sounded in the courtyard. I ran downstairs and admitted a group of students. Dear brother, how reluctant we are to disturb Master at this hour. One man addressed me apologetically. We made a mistake about train schedules, but felt we could not return home without a glimpse of our guru. He has been expecting you and is even now preparing your food. Sri Yukteswar's welcoming voice rang out. I led the astonished visitors to the kitchen. Master turned to me with twinkling eyes. Now that you have finished comparing notes, no doubt you are satisfied that our guests really did miss their train. I followed him to his bedroom half an hour later, realizing fully that I was about to sleep beside a godlike guru. Isn't that lovely? Gita reading comes. The exalted Lord said to Arjuna, I gave this imperishable yoga to Vivasat, the sun god. Vivasat passed down the knowledge to Manu, the Hindu lawgiver. Manu told it to Ishvaku, the founder of the solar dynasty of the Kshatriyas. Handed down in this way in orderly succession from Raj Rishis or royal Rishis, they knew it. But O scorchers of foes, Arjuna, by the long passage of time, this yoga was lost sight of on earth. Master's commentary, spirit, cosmic consciousness, here symbolized as Krishna, gave the indestructible Raja Yoga science, the technique of uniting soul and spirit, to the ancient Illuminato Vivasvat, the deity of the sun, symbolic of God's omnipresent light, or creative cosmic energy, which is manifested also in man as the microcosmic sun, or light of spiritual eye, epitome of all life and consciousness in the incarnate being. Vivasat imparted this sacred yoga to the great exponent of Dharma, Manu, symbolizing Manas, the mind, the instrument from which the sentient human consciousness derives. Manu bestowed it upon the founder of the solar dynasty of Kshatriyas, Ikshvaku, the symbolic of the intuitive astral eye of life and consciousness in man. In this orderly succession, this yoga was then bequeathed to the royal sages, symbolizing the descent of life and consciousness into the senses, giving man sensory perception and interaction with the material world. Thereafter, when the cycles of the world entered the dark ages, knowledge of this divine science deteriorated and was lost. Symbolically, throughout many incarnations, the senses are engrossed in and identified with matter, and man thus loses the knowledge and ability of reuniting his soul with spirit. These two verses thus proclaim the historical antiquity of Raja Yoga, the eternal, immutable science of uniting soul and spirit. At the same time, understood esoterically, they give a concise description of that science. The steps by which the soul descends from cosmic consciousness to the mortal state of identification with the human body, and the route it must take to reascend to its source, the all-blissful eternal spirit. We are so fortunate in having Master's commentary, because here he takes us from historical antiquity and puts the truth right within our own souls. Vivasat represents the light of the Purusha, of the divine consciousness. When we focus our whole attention at the Ajna and we look there with deep, quiet, discerning mind, we see a wonderful light. It can come in the beginning as gold in hue, a deep blue, and a pearl-like white. It can be a silver five-pointed star. When you enter deeply into these lights, and particularly the white light, you enter in to that divine consciousness by which all this creation was put forward. You reunite your consciousness with the divine. Manu then represents the mind, and he is the lawgiver. And in the beginning, we take on the law. We learn the do's and the don'ts because we've forgotten, we lost harmony with divine consciousness. And if we think that we can just skip that, then we are deeply mistaken because the mind is very tricky. He's always looking to find advantage for the human self and the body. And unless we learn to abide by Manu, the lawgiver, we will not make real spiritual progress. We have seen examples, both in the recent times as well as more distant times, of those spiritual teachers and guides, some of them genuine at the time, but they lost their way. And when they lost their way, they no longer abided by that spiritual law given by Manu. They thought they had gone above it and beyond it. Now, we were privileged to be with Mother Hamilton, and she truly had gone beyond the law. What does that mean when you go beyond Manu, the lawgiver? It means that now your consciousness is so united with God consciousness that there is no longer any effort required for complete attunement with divine consciousness. Normally, as aspirants, we are always seeking to put our mind on God and keep it there. We do that by chanting to God, focusing on the Ajna, deepening the attention through Hong Sa. We willfully put ourselves toward that divine goal. And after you have had repeated ascensions up into divine consciousness and then come back down into what you might call ordinary mortal consciousness, you finally evolve and you purify this brain. This is the different yugas or ages within your own being. And as you go through these ages, you go through a golden age. And in that golden age, you have perfect unity with God. And there are many, many people who have had brief experiences where they have felt that kind of unity, that purity, that perfect joy, that light, and they beheld it with everything in their being. And while you're in that experience, you don't think that there's anything else. And you can't even conceive of leaving it. And yet, it is as if the deep sea diver has weights tied to him. And after you have had time in those higher spheres, you are drawn back down. Your karma draws you back down. And suddenly you find yourself devoid of that spiritual consciousness. And it's heartbreaking, it really is. It's maddening. Because you want it to stay. You never want it to leave. And so then you descend down through the different stages, the different lokas, and you finally come down to the lowest stage. And if you're not careful, you can be dragged right back to where you began. And it's almost as if everything that you attain spiritually is but a distant dream, another life, one that you can barely remember, and it, perhaps it has no more draw on you because old habits have taken over. I have seen this happen. There are those who have been in uplifted experiences, and some for many years, and they're tremendous souls, really. But then they come to a point, they come to some test, and they can't overcome it, seemingly. They just can't get through it. And gradually their mind is taken away. And they're drawn to lesser things, to lower things. Before they were filled with the Spirit, before they were filled with the things of God, now there's all kinds of side paths and bypaths that take them off and away. They go to lower spheres. When you think that you have the capacity to directly perceive God, why would you waste your time on other things, lesser things? As Mother used to say, Mr. In-Between. Why not go directly to the President of the Universe and find there the ultimate goal in life? And yet, it is said that many are called, but few are chosen. And really, the choosing happens within the individual. We choose. We choose what to give power to. And so we determine what yuga or what age we're going to live in. Now, you may find yourself to be in the Kali Yuga. In the Kali Yuga, you're completely embroiled in the world of senses, in this world. We have just come through as a world, through a Kali Yuga. And not just a Kali Yuga, because there are different cycles that we're involved in. And in the smaller cycle that Sri Yukteswar describes, the 24,000-year cycle, and the larger cycle that runs into the hundreds of millions of years, it's amazing when you think about these Indian astrologers from thousands of years ago dealing with numbers like this. But they did. And we realize today that you need those kinds of numbers to really be talking about anything of historical worth in terms of cosmology. And so these larger cycles both colluded at the same time into the Kali Yuga. And we're in it. We've just come out of it a few hundred years ago. And that age was a time, if you look at the depth of it, about 500 AD, civilization, almost as we know it, reading and writing, government, law, the rule of law, almost completely disappeared. Mankind returned to a basic tribal kind of level. And there was wars and there were conflicts, one city against another, one tribe against another. And it was a difficult, difficult time. And people in general didn't think beyond their own circumstances. They didn't think in general about a heaven. They didn't think about anything higher. They didn't think that they had any capacity for anything more. Now, there were exceptions to this. But as a general rule, this is true. And even things that we take for granted today, such as books and reading and writing, almost completely disappeared off the face of the earth. There were just a few pockets where it was maintained. And when you are in this in your own sense, we might, in your own personal sense, this individual doesn't think of anything more than the food that he's eating, the work that he does, and the life that he has in this world. That's it. But then you begin to quicken. You move into the next stage, the Dwapara Yuga. The Dwapara Yuga is the one that we're currently having entered into. And it is the electrical age. It is the age when you begin to realize that there are more subtle properties. You think about this electrical age that we've entered into now, and the light by which I'm reading, computers, there are just so many things. They all run by electricity. You take away electricity, cars won't run. We would have no water supply coming to our home because that requires pumps. Everything would come to a standstill. And when some might think that's idyllic, it would be far from idyllic. There would be mass starvation. There would be much, much suffering without any electricity. But that is electricity on the gross base level. Within you, electricity is the astral. It is the subtle life force, the prana that moves through your body, that gives you the ability to think, to move, to act, to do everything that you do. So when you enter into the Dwapara Yuga within, you begin to see with the supersensory vision and senses. You begin to feel and be aware of these life energies moving through you. You have psychic phenomena opening to you, and you have some experiences in that. And that brings you into the Dwapara Yuga. If you advance further, you come into the Treta Yuga. And in the Treta Yuga, you are now going into a more refined sphere of consciousness. You're rising up into the causal. It is the magnetic stage. And of course, magnetism is something that we have some knowledge and awareness of. But magnetism exists throughout these cosmos. And there is the magnetism of attraction and repulsion by the two ends of a magnet. Inwardly, when you come into a state of magnetism, you realize that thought is extremely powerful. I remember as I was going through a stage when I became very, very aware how powerful each creative thought I had was. And it made me entirely responsible for my thinking. If we think of something negative, if we think of only of those things that we're afraid of or that we don't want, if we use this powerful creative mind in a negative way, we draw to ourselves those circumstances, those things. Some people live in a state of heightened fear and anxiety all the time. And it is a miserable state to be in. It is a hellish state to be in. In this Treta Yuga, you become very aware of this, how your thoughts dictate your moods, how your thoughts direct the astral energies that run throughout your being and all around you. You take responsibility for your thoughts. You begin to see that your thoughts can also free you just as much as they can imprison you. And through that, you direct your thoughts to the higher things in life, those things that are beautiful, those things that are uplifting, those things that are ennobling. And when we look out around society today, the media, and different movies and things like this, And we see the responsibility or lack of it that people take in the creation of entertainment. And that includes the news. And how that directs people's minds. Do they take responsibility for themselves first by making conscious choices of what they watch or don't watch? But also, you can track the nature of the world, where the world is at. And so much is based on fear. It's an interesting thing that at a time when we are physically more safe than perhaps ever in recorded history, we have more anxiety and we have more fear than ever. And it's because that's where we have chosen to focus our mind. And so as you refine your consciousness and you refine your mind, and you think only of God, you think only of the higher things in life, and that brings you into the next and highest state. And that is the Satya Yuga, the Golden Age. And when you enter into the Golden Age, you enter into an age of spirit. You are now divinely illumined. You not only see the light, but you are the light. You have realized the power of thought. You use your own energies for the highest service to all. And everything in your life is dedicated towards harmonizing you with this golden light, this blue light, and this white light that are emanating from the highest consciousness. There is no darkened place left inside of you. Every part of you is now illumined. You now exist in a divine consciousness. You have now transferred your consciousness from the Son of Man to the Son of God. And through this transformation, you are completely changed. And yet, in a very real way, you remain the same. You can live a simple life. There is little that you need. But God wishes to serve through you now. And so, you lend yourself in whatever way He decrees. There may be some who just live a very quiet life in a remote place. There may be others who take a more active role in this world. But at this time in our world, there are few who have attained to this golden age, this Satya Yuga. But when it happens, it is a wonderful thing. A wonderful thing. In fact, most of the world today would still deny the possibility of a human being being lifted up into this divine consciousness. That is because they are so enmeshed in the things of this world that they can't see beyond it. And they certainly can't see themselves as going beyond it. And so, in a way, in a very real way, they deny Jesus' teachings. And this is a great crime, because it retards mankind's progress. When this world comes to the point where it realizes the true goal of life is attaining this divine vision and goal, then we will have come a very long way toward that Satya Yuga or Golden Age. When you come to that point, where it is no longer a vague idea of something that you would like to attain to, where you feel that all of your energies are being gathered in order to strive to attain to that lofty goal, then you have come to a very important juncture in your life. Now it is up to you to utilize your entire strength, all your will, your mind, your heart, your soul, everything that you have toward attaining that divine goal. And if you will do this, you will go through all the experiences that are required. And you will come into that perfect state of being. Now you have to face all these different obstacles as you go up. You have to face the Kali age within you. The Dwapara, the Treta, before you finally enter into that golden age. Now each stage of the year is a reflection. Each solstice and each equinox is a reflection of those divine ages as they are laid out in the larger cosmos. And each day we have four stages in life. Master used to say that it is best to meditate between 4 and 6 a.m., between 11 o'clock a.m. and noon, between 5 p.m. and 6 p.m., between 10 p.m. and 12 midnight, that these represent the four different yugas or the four different changes during the day. But of course, we should meditate always. But it is good if we make special effort during these times. We must discipline ourselves. We must put ourselves under the rigor of discipline in order for this purification to take place. Now, we do not need to wear a sour face. We do not need to beat ourselves up, but we need to put our shoulder to the wheel. We need to always be leaning towards God, because our default will be back to ego consciousness. That's the strongest draw in us. And that is why we cannot even for a moment take a vacation from our spiritual sadhana. But it is not all hardship, because as we do so, we feel the contact with God. We feel the improvements happening within us. We feel a greater peace, a greater love, a greater joy. We feel inspired. But we must remember, too, that we are here to work. That we are here to enter that golden age. And if we will but do it, we can transcend the order that this world is going through. We don't have to wait for this world to enter into that golden age. Now, this may put us out of step somewhat with the world, because it doesn't give it much validity. That's all right. I consider that a badge of honor today. I wouldn't want to just go along with what the world is doing. I don't care for it. And sometimes it sickens me, because you realize what a great difficulty people are going to put themselves through. The attraction to drugs, the attraction to alcohol, the attraction to sex with anybody you choose, and then all the consequences that come with it. And it's hard. The consequences are steep. Not because God is vengeful, but because we have put ourselves against spiritual law. We have refused to acknowledge that Manu, the lawgiver, Moses, the lawgiver, has anything to offer to us. We want to do what we want to do. And that varies by the moment. And a life led like that will lead to disaster. So let us simplify our life by putting our mind upon God alone. It is so wonderful to think that you can sing your way to God, that you can love your way to God, that you can serve your way to God. These are lovely, wonderful ways to go. That we can reserve a time twice a day that it's just for God and yourself. It's an appointment that you keep, not out of some discipline and hardship, because it's a time for you to receive. It's a time all through the day. You give and give and give. All your life energy runs out to this world through the senses. This is a time that you can receive. You can open yourself and let God flow into you, charge you, regenerate you, revivify you, bring you into a resurrected state of consciousness. Why would you deny yourself that opportunity to receive in this way? You would be crazy. So when you see it from that standpoint, you keep your appointment with God morning and night. But all through the day, you chant to God, you love God, you serve God. And you will enter into such a life, you will never look back and make one regret, have one regret for having made any effort toward attaining that goal. You will set yourself up into the Satya Yuga. You will be a leader of mankind, because mankind will be following, and eventually it will come. But you can help that day arrive sooner by yourself transcending the day and the moment and going into that wonderful Satya Yuga even now. Om Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Ram. May those masters of light, Jesus, Babaji, Lahiri Mahasaya, Swami Sri Yukteswarji, Master, Mother, Papa, Mataji, Swamiji, saints and sages of all religions, may they bless you and keep you and lift you up into that illuminating light of consciousness. And so immerse you into that light that you will become one with that, never to be the same again. It is what you have come to do. So be it.